Thanks for joining this conversation about church and church planting and stuff like that. Harry Steele, what a great English name. So, hello, Harry.
Hello. It's good to be here. It's good to be here. Yeah.
So, Harry, would you please introduce yourself a little bit for the audience who don't know you, don't know who Harry Edwin Steele is?
Sure. Yeah. So, I'm a priest in the Church of England, and I currently live in towards the south of England, about an hour away from London, and about 15 minutes away from Cambridge. And I have a number of roles in the church. One is I work for a diocese, which is, you know, the Church of England is split into these areas. And I have a diocesan role trying to encourage local churches in mission and evangelism and church growth. So that's one of my roles. I do that half time. I do another half time role doing a similar thing, but nationally. And then in my spare time, such as it is, I just didn't know what to do as a hobby. So in my spare time, I thought I'll actually practice what I preach. And so I have two very small, rural, very traditional churches in a very rural part of England, little tiny villages. If most people imagine an English village, that is what our villages look like. Thatched roofs and all that kind of stuff. Yeah,
when it's hard to imagine, probably for the average German who thinks about London or Liverpool, what rural England would look like. How many people live in these villages?
So one of my villages has got a population of 500, and the other one is 170.
Wow, that's really small. And they do have a church, like a church building.
Or? Yeah, both of them have their own church buildings, which is one of the problems that we perhaps face as the Church of England.
Church buildings, how's that a problem?
Big church buildings in very small communities. They've all got one, and they all need some care and attention.
Yes, the heating system is always a thing, isn't it?
That's it. Mm. Yeah.
We do have a similar church system in Germany with dioceses, and 45% of the German population lives in rural areas. So the cities have grown over the years, but ever since Corona and over the course of the last 3 to 4 years, people are starting moving back to the villages because they simply can't afford to buy a house, buy a flat, or to even rent somewhere in a big city. The prices in Munich, Berlin, Hamburg have been soaring.
Wow.
So, most of the people will probably sympathize with you for that role and be able to connect with things you've learned there. So
it's good. It's been a good learning experience. It's been interesting because these churches, I do the church stuff in my spare time. So I think what's interesting about that is if you can only do a few things connected to church, what would they be? What do you keep and what's, you know, would be a bonus, but if you haven't got time, you just can't do it. That's been the lesson of the last couple of years for me. It's been very interesting. Yeah,
I'm tempted to ask what you have learned from that, because prioritizing is always a good exercise.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we need to.
Yeah. Shall I tell the listeners as well, Bjorn? Shall I just give a bit of my background? Because that
yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. It's probably worth me because I'm looking forward to this conversation, but and where it's going to go. Who knows where it's going to go?
Yes.
But just to let the people know that I grew up in the Pentecostal church, actually, so the Free Pentecostal Church. And I didn't come into the Church of England until I was about 22. I started to attend the Church of England. And then I trained in the Pentecostal church to be a Pentecostal minister. And whilst I was training, I attended a Church of England church. And then I finished training to be a Pentecostal minister. And then a year later, started to train to be a priest in the Church of England. And when I went off to train to be a priest in the Church of England, I was formally designated as what we in the Church of England call ordained pioneer ministry. So I was identified as someone who could lead fresh expressions of church, and was actually one of the first in the Church of England to receive that official designation.
That's definitely, let me just hop in there. That's definitely something we don't have in Germany. We still, we do have a course, but nothing that the church does overly recognize. We do have a fresh ex course situated in Kassel and run by the actually YMCA for the Church of Germany, but not in a formal training course like you experienced. So how can a German listener understand what an ordained pioneer minister is and how that would look like?
Yeah, so the idea was called originally, it was about it being a pathway. So it's not a distinct ministry. The Church of England, being the Church of England, it didn't want to have different priests, but it was just, here is a priest. An ordained pioneer minister is a priest who will be designated as being on this particular pathway. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that they will be able to work in areas where most of their work will perhaps be outside of the church or on the edges of the church. So rather than getting bogged down with the center of the church too much, it will be about reaching out to those who don't yet go to church. That was the intention. And it was a good intention and still is. How the theory of that works out in practice is interesting, because in all these things, it all comes down to money. So it's about there being roles, paid roles for people to go and do that. And how that works out is interesting.
I think it's connected all in all to the developments that the Church of England has made over the last 20 years. And when I remember correctly, not all of them were like great advancements, but were rather reactions to rather sad situations church-wise. Would you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, well, a good few years ago now, I can't quite remember when it was, the church did released a report called Mission Shaped Ministry. It was about, they identified pioneers, and they wanted to say, these are people who can reach out to those who don't yet go to church. And I think the intention for fresh expressions in the Church of England and for these pioneers was really good, to say, we want to draw a line in the sand. We want to say, this is important, and we want to do something practical about this. And that was a good motivation. I think there were two small problems with it. Is one, it basically then said some of the quote unquote normal priests in the church, kind of, there was a sense that they might say, well, why are they so special? This group have been identified as pioneers. And that they might have felt that, but on the other side, that there might have been some priests who might have said, well, hold on, aren't we all pioneers? And actually, there's a lot of truth in that. If we say, you see this in all areas of church life, if you say this person's special job is to do this, then it means everyone else says, I don't have to do that anymore. If we say you're the welcome team in church this morning, then everyone else thinks, well, I don't have to be friendly and welcoming because they're doing it. And I think that was the problem with pioneer ministry is the idea was that they would be good at reaching out to unchurched people, would be good at evangelism and nurturing faith and growing church on the fringes of church and outside the church. And the danger of that is everyone else says, well, we can carry on doing what we've always done then, because that lot are going to do that over there. And that's not the case. We can't just carry on doing what we've always done.
Yeah, we can, the German church can resonate with that. Over the years, there have been so many articles, so many research published about the demise of the German church, about the demise of church in the Western world in general. I just read an article a couple of days ago who said that 60% of Germans are not connecting with any kind of religious systems in or a religious institution at all, which is pretty significant, because it's over 50%, over half of our population is simply saying, we don't need a religious system or any kind of religious institutions in our lives. And that's pretty challenging for religious institutions, as the church obviously is.
Yeah, and it's very similar here in England. And, you know, I think it brings us back to very simple questions. And one of the phrases I've used a few times is, you know, the gospel's still true, even if no one believes it. You know, we say in our worship sometimes, Christ has died, Christ is risen, Christ will come again. If people don't believe that, then that's still true. I think that's my faith. The challenge is the church is changing, and change is always difficult. And just as society, you know, Western contemporary society is changing, the church is trying to keep up with that. And that will be a challenge. And we see the church in the global South growing, and our churches are declining. And what does that mean? What does that look like? But then the flip side of that is there are so many people downloading apps on their phones about mindfulness and meditation and prayer, and so people are still spiritual and they're still hungry. And so maybe part of the change is what the church is offering. And I'm pretty passionate about that. You know, I think the gospel, the hope of the gospel still resonates with people. I just think it doesn't get through as well because of how we present that.
Yes, I totally agree that hope is something the gospel that has a central place in the gospel, and Paul elaborates on that so many times in his writings about hope, what Christ brings to a world that's been in crisis in these times, and now we have the global pandemic and the cultural questions that resonate with that, but again, our main thing is hope of the resurrection and stuff like that. So we agree on that. But let me just say that it's when I listen to you and the picture you present from the Church of England, so there is this group of pioneer ministers and this thing called Fresh Expressions, and you go to the fringes. It sounds pretty good. Actually, it sounds like, hey, there's something happening, and there are reports that we receive in Germany, and we have a Fresh Eggs movement going on here. And it sounds like, I exaggerate a little bit, but so the Church of England had problems, and then they invented Fresh Eggs and ordained pioneer ministers.
Yeah,
and now everything's fine, and and the Church of England is on the great track again, and people will come to faith in by the droves, because of that whole thing. How do you stand towards that end? I've been exaggerating.
I wish that were true. Wow, I mean that is a very simple but difficult question. They're the best questions. I think in the early days of the Fresh Expression of Church movement is that it was about really radical expressions of church. So there was a skate church, and there was a surfing church, and there was all these kinds of things. And
the 9 o'clock service wasn't it in Sheffield?
The 9 o'clock service was a sort of youth, young adults, clubby kind of church that for reasons not really connected to that, because of a very failed, flawed leadership, it absolutely imploded in a spectacular sense. In many ways, that gathering of people may have informed the Fresh Expressions movement, because that was a little bit before that the Fresh Expressions movement really came about. But it's interesting, Bjorn, because I've been on this journey with you about Fresh Expressions and things for quite a while. And there was a point about 10 years ago, we both were involved in sort of youth, teenage and young adult ministry. And I came over to Germany to visit yours. And we had these interesting conversations. My church for teenagers and young adults was very church based almost, so we had worship and word, and we did that once a week on a Sunday evening, and we did community about once a month, and you were the opposite way around, so you did community much stronger, your worship was monthly. So we got together to discuss it, but the point of this is I remember coming to Germany and we visited a Fresh Expression or a emerging church type thing. I can't remember much about it other than it was in this cafe and it was all very informal and trendy. And I just looked around the room and just thought, wow, you know, these are all, you know, 20, 30 year olds, all with big framed glasses and beards and all into the coffee and beer culture. And that's one of the problems with Fresh Expressions, is that they become, I'm going to use a really technical word here, you might want to translate, but they become homogenous. So they're all one type of people there.
Also homogene oder gleichartige Gruppen sind hier angesprochen. Das heißt, das ist das Gemeindebauprinzip, was dahinter steht eben. Genau, im Englischen homogeneous units of people. Und genau.
Great.
So I translated that.
Thank you. And then after I was involved in this really good teenage and young adults sort of Fresh Expression, I then had a sort of what you would call a normal church. And I remember at one point doing something on an evening, and we were sitting down with food, and I looked over at a table, and there was a very young single mum sat down with a very successful businessman, sat down with a professional sports person, and there were kids running around, and it just felt more like church because we were all different. We were family together from all backgrounds. So there's loads of questions around that and around Fresh Expressions, but the bottom line is that you can present it in two ways. So one way of saying it is that they think that when they count up and do the surveys of Fresh Expressions of Church, that the amount of people in the Church of England attending a Fresh Expression of Church is the equivalent to one whole diocese of normal church worship. And in a sense, that's great, and let's celebrate that. But the other side of it is, I think some people just want to go to church on a Sunday morning and they want to receive the bread and the wine and meet with Christ in that. They want, you know, they want to rub shoulders with people of all ages and all types. And what does that look like? So it's not, it's had a good impact. It's been a good conversation. It's caused the church to say, what is church? How do we do this? What is mission? How do we reach out to the unchurched? But has it, you know, has it radically transformed the Church of England? Not radically, And where we are now in the Church of England is having these conversations, similar, it sounds, to the one that you're having in the church in Germany, which is that the money's, I guess, running out. Mm. We have this infrastructure of the parish system, which is a church building in every parish, that's very cumbersome and expensive. Mm. Yeah, it's just difficult. Is that sustainable? You know, there used to be shops in every village, and there isn't anymore. But there's still churches in every village. But can that happen as we go into the 21st century? And
there are great similarities because our buildings really do hamper us and become more and more of an obstacle for the church, because they need to care about the buildings. And yes, by the way, in terms of introduction, I should have probably said that we have a long-term friendship and know each other for like 15 years or even longer. And talk about church a lot. So this is essentially us recording what we would talk about anyways.
Absolutely.
It's a good thing to record this and make it available for readers and listeners in Germany to participate in the whole discussion. So saying that in a kind of middle of everything. Thanks for referring to that. It does almost sound like one diocese. You say fresh expressions make up one diocese. Can we have a relation on how many dioceses are there in the Church of England, so we can have a perspective?
I knew you'd ask that question. That is the kind of question I should know the answer to.
I wouldn't know either, because dioceses is in Germany are sometimes really small, sometimes huge, and it depends on the region. So my guess would be like 200 probably in Germany.
Oh, wow. If you could hear that, listeners could hear that tapping in the background. That was me looking up on Google. So we have 42 dioceses in the Church of England.
It gives a little perspective to see that the Freshics movement is there and is impacting. But there's 40 times more normal people, or I would say a different mode of church being practiced in the Church of England. Is there, just to ask a controversial question, is there a kind of struggle between Freshics and the more traditional mode of that church is experienced in the UK?
I think there can be, for sure. And, from a personal example, as I said, I was identified as being someone who might lead a fresh expression of church. And I did for the first 4 to 5 years of my ministry. Then I went and took on, a normal parish. Mm. And people said, "Why are you doing this, Harry? I thought you were a pioneer." And I said, "Well, hold on a minute. This parish church is in quite a fairly tricky area in Sheffield. It's like had bits of social need, not the richest area. And the church had, turning up on a Sunday, about 25 to 30 people. And the idea was to just try and help that church to grow. And I think there's a pioneering element to that. And the church was very, very traditional. It was very what we call in the Church of England high church. It was almost Roman Catholic in its style. The challenge was then, well, how do we, what role does that, how is it relevant, how do we help a church like that to grow? So I think it was very pioneering. But that was a conversation. Everyone said, "I thought you were a pioneer, Harry." And I said, what can be more pioneering than helping a church to grow? Was the Apostle Paul a pioneer? Because that's the kind of thing he did, planting churches, supporting churches. So I think that's the thing. And that's the interesting discussion is, you know, fresh expressions of church are about reaching out to new people. But if you contextualize worship, if you make worship relevant to you, the people around you, then you reach new people.
Yeah, actually, thinking about our friendship, we got to know each other when you were a vicar at All Saints.
That's right, yeah.
And then you moved to St. Peter's Greenhill, the church you was receiving. Isn't there that great story? I do remember that you went to your job interview there in a very special fashion.
They were quite shocked. So I turned up. We have what we call a PCC, Parochial Church Council.
Yes.
Lay people have voted on to be part of the interview of a potential incoming priest. And I turned up to that interview riding a Harley Davidson motorbike.
Incredibly loud. I remember that bike. It was so loud. Oh, boy.
Yeah. And I had, you know, I had my tattoos on display. And so it was great for them that they said, yeah, we want Harry, because they must have been nervous about it, but they wanted to change. So and we did change and we did grow. It was a fabulous journey that we went on. Yeah.
Yeah. That's encouraging, because from what I hear from you, it's really these both sides, the pioneer minister who is able to start something new, and then to transform existing churches, which is what I understand are you trying to do, or are you doing in the rural areas? Both of the before said churches are set in Sheffield, which is a pretty big city.
Yeah,
I should know, because in one time I drove into Sheffield and said, well, we'll find the church. It has to be somewhere around. And then we ended up at some gas station phoning you and buying a map, because we simply could not find a way to.
Now, Sheffield's pretty big. It's about a million people in the, you know.
Yes. And I was a little bit cocky or overconfident in my abilities to.
Doesn't sound like you at all, Bear.
No. Yes. So both sides, and the transformation of existing churches and the setting up of new things.
It's interesting now, just jumping in on that's something the Church of England is talking about a lot. And so there's this phrase being used, which again, some people are okay with it, others don't like it, about a mixed ecology of church, which is do the traditional, but and also do something that connects with new people. The thing about that, and about how we feel about, oh, I don't like new things, or it isn't new. You know, that's what the church has been about for 2,000 years, surely. Yes. So we've got to reach out to the people around us.
Definitely. And I don't know if you're familiar with Ralph B. Winter's article, which he submitted to, I think, a World Council of Churches, is that church in many modes. And he was suggesting the sodality and the modality side of church, the one reaching out and the one being, I wouldn't say exactly stationary, but having the focus set more on community than on mission.
Yeah, very important.
Yes. So, Harry, it's great to talk to you about these things. But on the whole, let me just tell you that how the situation in Germany looks like, just on a rough basis. The church is losing. So it's there's no denying it. Over the course of the last 20 years, it's growing more evident. The statistics, the research, even the church internal statistics acknowledge that the Church of Germany is losing it. So resources are being put into some kind of action, and they are adopting, in my point of view, a stance that the fresh expressions of the Church of England will kind of be the way, maybe the cardinal way to refresh churches, to reframe the whole mission setting, and to gain not the upper hand, but to somehow resurface above the water again, you know, kind of like gulps some air. So the fresh is really, in my opinion, growing more important as a topic, as in education of young vicars, and also on the social media. So let's just say we put all our eggs into the fresh eggs basket. What would your opinion of that be, coming from an outside perspective, from someone who's learned to be a pioneer minister and to transform churches? What do you think about that? And don't be too polite. I know English people can be very polite, but we Germans can take the hard truth of things.
I know. Yeah, well, I mean, the short answer is don't do that.
Don't put your eggs all in one basket.
Do not do that. No. I do think that church in many modes, that's brilliant. I would say, yes, definitely do that. But I just think we've got to think harder about the center. You can't just change the fringe. You've got to change the center as well. And that's really my passion. So do fresh X, go out and start new things and do crazy new things. But there's no point doing that unless we change the center as well. And one of the things we just have to get better at, your church, my church, and I love the church passionately, is we have to get better at making our Sunday worship more accessible, or whenever our worship is. Our main act of gathering together to celebrate the story of salvation and our place in that, and how we are lovingly made by a creator God who doesn't give up on anything. That's a really brilliant story that we rehearse and celebrate together for an hour or so a week. And the way that we do it is just not connecting with people generally. I mean, there are exceptions to that. So for me, it's all about this contextual worship, I think. And who's missing from our churches? Because the Church of England is in decline and has been in steady decline, and the decline is gathering pace for 30 years or more, probably more. And one area in particular that we're missing out on are families and young people. And then if you go into a typical church on a Sunday morning, you just think it's not surprising. Because most of our worship is framed around this understanding that everyone, when they're relaxing at home, is listening to the most amazing classical music, you know, and that's what everyone loves to do. And so our worship reflects that. And we have, you know, all this amazing church music, which is beautiful. And it's not about preference, but it's just acknowledging the fact that most people nowadays are listening to, you know, pop music type
pop
stuff.
Pop music, yeah, mainstream.
And you can't, the church has to be a bit different. And I love that. I mean, how odd is it that our main act of worship is eating a little bit of bread and drinking a little bit of wine and believing this is Jesus' body and blood? I mean, that's completely bonkers unless you get it. And so our music and the words around it don't have to be, you know, in a like Beyonce style, but equally, can we have something that's newer than 300 years old? And I just think that's the big problem. We have too many words. We have music that isn't, and that wasn't always the case in the Church of England. In the church in England, you know, we if you go back a few hundred years, it was, especially in villages like mine, it was the farmers and the working men would gather together in the back of church and would play on folk instruments, you know, that were cheap and easy, and they were violins and fiddles and, you know, guitars almost. And then at some point we decided, no, you lot are out, let's get a nice big organ in, make this more highbrow and middle class. And I think that's where we are as a church. And I think that has to change. The problem is change is really hard. And everywhere on a sudden, when I've tried to do those changes, and I've never been that extreme in those changes, I've never been completely, you know, out there in terms of fresh expressions, or you know, I've never done like hip hop church or anything like that. It's always been fairly middle of the road, but we just find that families come and children come and young people come, and in that, some in the older church are saying, oh, we really liked when we had the prayers that were written in 1662, and we really liked the organ,
the Book
music,
of Common Prayer. Yes,
Book of Common Prayer. And there's a great beauty to those words, you know, just like Shakespeare is the best, you know, just an amazing playwright. And I love Shakespeare, but last night I went to watch a James Bond movie.
So no time to die.
No time to die. So we can't, it was long. Wow. We can't have this Shakespeare-esque worship in our churches and expect young people to come. And my own boy, I've got two lads, two boys, one's 15. And, you know, he even said to me the other day, he's like, why do we always have organ music? You know, and he said, I don't get it. And I'm like, I'm not surprised you don't get it. So I think, yeah, fresh expressions, you know, completely go for it, but we've got to reform the center as well.
Yes. So the center for you is structured around the worship experience, the worship, the kind of way that worship is conducted and is inviting the community in. And that would be one expression of church as it functions. What would you add to that center, to that core, coming from the gospel message? I think because it's the thing we've been talking about on so many occasions.
I mean, I'm really, in many ways, despite being this pioneer minister, I'm very traditional, and I love sacramental worship. And so for me, the heart of worship is participating in the Lord's Supper and the bread and the wine and the mystery behind that and the difference of that and how it is quite odd. But connected to that is, and I think a part of the theology of it and the ecclesiology of it is all the other meals that Jesus had as well. And I think the Last Supper narrative in the Gospels, I don't think you should take those in isolation. I think all the other meals stack up and are part of that. So, you know, the feeding of the 5,000 and, you know, I think a lot of that, the miracle was that there were all this, different people sat down together, sharing a meal together. And there was no question of purity law or who's allowed to sit with who, or they were just all invited to receive the grace of God. There was the story of Zacchaeus, you know, Jesus calling Zacchaeus down from a tree. And we grew up in Sunday school thinking Zacchaeus is this little short guy, you know, a cheeky, cuddly kind of, but Zacchaeus was a really bad man. You know, he was he was a criminal who was helping the Roman oppressors. And Jesus just says, Zacchaeus, come down from the tree. We're going to your house for food. And there's something about that radical hospitality. And there's something around eating together, which I think is really, really important. And rubbing shoulders, bumping elbows with people who are very different from us and trying to facilitate that and make that happen. And you know, but there's that phrase, isn't there? Build a bigger table. I don't know if that's where that phrase came from, but that's a theological phrase. That's, you know, that's what the church should always be doing, is we need to build a bigger table and get more people around.
And that reminds me immediately of the original purpose of the altar, which was representing the table.
Yeah.
On which to have Eucharist on and which to share a meal. So actually a big table is part of every church, but we don't know the symbol, or we don't recognize the symbol anymore.
And is it, you know, there's something less effective about our Sunday celebration of Holy Communion if it doesn't symbolize the table fellowship that happens not on a Sunday, if it doesn't symbolize the inclusiveness and the welcome and the radical hospitality, if it's an isolated event that's done with the proper music and the proper words and we're doing this the right way, then what is that? Because for Christ in the Gospels, that Last Supper was a representation of, you know, this raggedy bunch of his closest disciples, but also it was a reflection of his meal with Zacchaeus, the feeding of the 5,000, you know, him being accused of being a glutton and a drunkard. It was symbolic of that wideness of the grace of God. It was symbolic of the water into wine miracle and this great wedding feast, in which everyone gets to taste the water that's been turned into wine. So I think that's really, really important. And most of the time when we're planning our worship in our churches, the question we ask is, what is the proper way to do this? How has this been done in the past? How can we stick to the tradition of the church? And what we should be asking is, how can we reflect that radical hospitality of Jesus? And not the proper way of doing it. It should look a bit messy at times.
Yeah.
It should. Yes. You know. And those have been the moments for me, the joy of celebrating that Holy Communion is when you've got some little kid tugging it on your robes, you know, and you're trying to do it all nice and be, oh, look at me, I'm very holy and devout and doing this properly. And some kid's, you know, tugging on your robe already, holding out his hand to receive the bread before you finish saying your prayers. And that's just a beautiful thing that is a picture of what church should be.
I do remember fondly being in both churches in All Saints and St. Peter's Greenhill and doing actually the services on the Sunday together with you and doing the early morning service, which was highly ritualized. I never got the bowing thing, you know, when to bow where.
Absolutely.
But it was great to see all those elderly people together around communion. And we ended up, I think actually in both churches, in the afternoon or early afternoon with the youth service and family service. And that was, for me, a great experience to have different services, different opportunities for people to engage in that story, and you kindly inviting me in with my broken English and my limited abilities to communicate and to participate in that story and that reflection of who Christ really is. Do you know the book The Mealtime Habits of the Messiah?
I don't know it, no.
No, it's actually, I was thinking the whole time because it remembered what you said, kind of brought it up. We should Google it because I don't know the author anymore. I have it somewhere hidden, The Mealtime Habits of the Messiah. You should probably have a look into that and probably be encouraged because quite a lot of things you just said turn up in that book. It's a small one. It's not...
That would be typical of me to, you know, bang on about all this stuff and then find out someone's written the book already.
It might
people,
be actually...
people often say to me, Harry, when are you going to write a book? I've never written a book. And I think I just say, well, you know, one day I'd love to perhaps, but in the meantime, I just talk about it all the time.
Yeah, I can probably confine to our listeners that you are in the habit of reading a book a day. If you've got the time for that.
I'd love to do that, yeah.
Yes, and I can hardly imagine how family life must be like with the dog and your kids and stuff. And it's just sitting there in your reading chair and reading a book a day.
I try.
Yeah, it's great. It's a good habit, I think. Mealtime Habits of the Messiah. Is it? I don't know.
I found it. It's by very German sounding gentleman, Konrad Genf.
Yes, yes, that's the one, yeah. But I think he's an American.
Probably.
He's a theologian, and I think he wrote a couple of books also on missional and emerging churches. And I do remember the subtitle, which said, they killed Jesus because of the way he ate.
Wow,
which is great. Very, very powerful.
Mm. Yeah.
So community, actually, this kind of binds together fresh expressions of church and traditional churches because both symbolize the same thing. And I just said it in our little chat that we had before the recording, that every time I think about a fresh eggs and church, you're saying from a couple of years ago, probably in Sheffield, you kept saying that fresh expressions of church is simply church done well.
Exactly.
And that's kind of sums up quite a lot for me.
Are you sure that I said that?
Yes, you did.
I don't think I'm that clever, but perhaps I stole it from someone else.
Yes, you have. I do remember, I think it was in Sheffield in that...
Yeah, would have been.
Yeah, in a garden somewhere, and you were smoking a pipe.
May have been.
Yes, and you said, you know what fresh eggs is? It's simply church done well. And so I think we need to reconnect with that or rediscover how church done well really looks like and what freedom is there in expressions. I have a very difficult question for you, which is again a simple one, because I'm really interested in the perspective of an English man who has so much experience with a different kind of doing church and doing church well. You know, in Germany, we due to the Corona crisis, we have less income in the churches, less budget and available. And it goes through the whole spectrum, like the free churches and the state church and all of them. So if you were to be the financial expert for dioceses or for the German church, what would be your take on how do you distribute money towards like new forms or traditional things or something like that? Give us a hint or something. How would you do that? How would you distribute money to kind of forward that thing with the community and stuff for the Church of Germany?
Wow. It always comes down to money, doesn't it?
It does.
And it is for our church as well here in England. I mean, I think if I was in control of the money, and let's all just take a moment to thank the Lord that I'm not, then I think I would want to put it into training lay and ordained people to be ministers of the gospel again. And to be evangelists. One of the things we do in our training in the Church of England, and I'm certain it's true, it might even be more true in the church in Germany, is that we spend a lot of money training ordained priests. All that training is front loaded. You do it all at the beginning, and then you go off and become a minister of the church. And then you don't do loads more training after that. So it might cost like, you know, tens of thousands of euros to train people at the beginning. And then you just go off and off you go and you can do your thing. But a lot of that training is around theology. And you do need good theology. And we do need really good academics in the church. And I'm all over that. You know, one of the things in one of my jobs in particular is just asking people who are ministers in the church, lay or ordained, you know, if someone said to you, I want to become a follower of Christ, what would you do? And the look of terror in their eyes. Yeah. Often, you know, if I said to them, can you share with me your view on Karl Barth's view of, you know, the Holy Spirit in John's gospel, they'd be all over that. They'd be fine. But if you say, how do you actually help someone to come to know Jesus and to follow Christ, then they they've either forgotten or never learnt or have no concept. And that would be the way I would shift some of the spending, for sure, is saying, actually, instead of training pastors and theologians, let's train more missionaries.
Yeah, you're totally in line with Leslie Newbegin, another famous British theologian and missiologist. I think in Manchester he taught.
Yeah.
To say, hey, we need to approach doing church in the 20th and 21st century more in terms of missions and training missionaries.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that's a very good advice, and I think, or I hope, that listeners will heed that call and discuss that, because I do think we will face a new challenges, which might just be too much for our common understanding of church and missions, and which might or will need a new skill set or mindset or worldview on a deep level. And
I love that the story I heard about Dallas Willard. Do you know Dallas Willard?
Yes, definitely.
He's kind of very big spiritual writer from the evangelical tradition, and his books are really dense. There's a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah.
And he was asked to do church consultancy with big churches in America. And I believe he used to take their money off them and then ask them two questions. How are you making disciples? And is it working? So, I mean, that's a great question for our church councils, our ministers of the church to ask, our, you know, children's workers, those who plan the worship, whatever. You know, how are you making disciples, and is it working?
Thanks for sharing that. That's very, very powerful. And what we haven't actually discussed, and what I tell you now, is that I'm again becoming a part of a church plant here in Marburg, a new one, bigger one. And we were talking about hybrid worship services. So this church is really, really onto something, I'd say, very, very good and very, very at the heartbeat of the culture right now. But I was having that nagging doubt, and I was texting the leader, or one of the leaders, the other day, and say, how does that equate or resonate with making disciples? How is that going to turn out in that respect? And so and he said, well, this will always be a fortnight service, and in the intervals in between, we will have installed missional small groups.
Great.
To go into the whole topic of making disciples or being a disciple of Jesus. And I will actually take one or two of your cues and talk about how sharing a meal and how the Eucharist in the homes can become part of that. So thanks. Sounds on fun. A personal level. Yes.
Sounds fun. Yeah. That's another very challenging question, is that business of hybrid church and making disciples. You should do a podcast on that, Bjorn.
Yes, we should. We should actually. I fear we've run out of time for today's session. So we actually might want to talk a little bit more on the next one.
I'm pretty sure
we will meet again and talk again about this, the thing we love about the church, about Jesus, and all of what comes off that. Thanks for your time. And for
I feel very humbled to have been on this podcast with you, Bjorn, because I know you have these great guests who have all written about 50 books and all this, and I'm just a humble little, you know, minister in the church who's...
Yeah, I know.
I mean, we could do the bit where you say, Harry, can our listeners buy any of your books? And I go, no, sorry, I haven't written one. where do you blog? Nowhere. How can they reach out to you? No. I don't know.
Harry, that's actually one of the reasons why I invited you, because I know you have these deep thoughts and they need to have to be recorded and need to get out there for people to profit from it. So yeah, and the next guest on that series, or one of the next guests, will be Alan Hirsch, and I will be interviewing him. He's a famous museologist and writer.
He's a good guy. Yeah,
he's a good guy. And I will probably interview him in terms of discipleship and what does it mean to follow Christ in the 21st century. So we will essentially pick it up where we're going to believe that today, right, and get another picture of him or another impressions of Alan towards the situation of the church in the West, and have another view of the Church of Germany and have some advice. But I'm deeply thankful for your friendship and for the conversation we had about these things.
Thank you.
And hope this will really serve the church planters, people who are interested in church planting here on Gründercast. So thanks again.
Thanks, Björn.
Das war eine Episode des Gründercast. Gründen, entwickeln und multiplizieren. Projektleitung Klaus Schönberg. Beratung und Begleitung Björn Wagner. Die Aufnahmeleitung ist bei Sebastian Ruskamp. Der Gründercast ist ein Projekt des Bundes evangelisch-freikirchlicher Gemeinden in Deutschland. Mehr Infos über die Baptisten findet ihr unter www.baptisten.de.